The Green Room with Orla Barry on News Talk.
In 2014, Maurice Gahan's father killed himself, setting off a chain reaction that began with her placement on an ISIS watch list in Amsterdam and ended with her sharing a psych ward in LA with Kanye West. This is the blurb for Drowning, comedian Maurice Gahan's new show opening as part of the Dublin Fringe Festival this week. And Maurice Gahan joins us now. Maurice, how much of the show is factual?
It's a lighthearted comedy. It's all factual. It's all based on stuff that happened to me in the 2 year period of when my dad killed himself. And I moved to Amsterdam and then I moved to LA. So everything that I say is true. Yeah.
And it's not, I guess, the show isn't just based on your dad's struggle with mental health, but also yours, because you're quite open about yours as well.
Yeah, I think when I first started to write it, I thought it was about him. Like when I started comedy, everyone kept saying, they're like, that's a fringe show. Your dad killed himself, because it's very fringy. That's what I thought when I was writing it, that it would just be about him and just like the funny stuff that happened. But as I was writing it, it became a lot more about me and about like my own mental health problems. And yeah, so it started about him and then it became about me.
And we have to remind people, of course, we're talking comedy. So how difficult was it to make it funny?
Yeah, I mean, It's comedy, but it's definitely not a stand-up show. There's some parts in it that are quite serious. I did a preview and one girl cried and I was like, okay, it's not just comedy then. but it's definitely like a dark comedy. It wouldn't be like everybody's cup of tea. It's about like trying to find the humor in like really dark, horrible stuff that happens. And that's just naturally how I am a little bit. When really bad stuff happens, it's like try to find the funny in it, because it's a lot easier to process once you're laughing. It's quite dark, the humor in it.
You've written about your dad's suicide and his suicide attempt when you were 14, which itself had a really lasting impact on you. As you know, I can only imagine, as a teenager, you were heading into your mocks in the junior cert. And it had obviously a huge impact on your life back then.
Yeah, and I think almost the worst part was the not being able to talk about it, like that Irish mentality of not speaking about emotional stuff. So the attempt that he made, I think, was like a lot more impactful on me than the actual suicide, because it was something like I witnessed him doing and I was so young as well. But then the fact that like none of us talked about it afterwards, it's like it just didn't happen, I think was probably the most traumatic part of it. And that's what I hope I'm doing with this show, of like being very honest about what it's like to go through mental health problems. Because I think like we like to say like we want to have a conversation about mental health, but we're never sure what we actually want to say once we're in the conversation. And I think that that's very detrimental to people that are depressed. And so many people are. It's like this like filthy secret that we have in Ireland, that so many people want to kill themselves, but we just never talk about it until they've actually done it.
When you say that you didn't have a conversation about it, was it within your own family circle or was it within your wider friends circle?
Both. My dad never talked about it. So my immediate family, we just pretended it didn't happen. And then to like my friends, I just never even told them that it happened. When I posted that article, I got messages from people that I knew back then. And they're like, I had no idea. Because it's almost like it's this shameful thing.
And it's interesting, what you wrote in the article as well was, after someone has taken their own life, that there is this kind of outpouring of sympathy and grief, and people are overwhelmed that someone that they knew should kind of die in such a way, and particularly if someone's famous, we see this kind of worldwide outpouring of grief. But you make the point that actually there were many were suffering a lot up until the point that they made this decision to end it all. But no one really takes much note, or, you know, wants to take much notice when someone is struggling. It's only after they're gone that they express this kind of horror at what's happened. What's that about, do you think? This, our inability to be able to reach out to someone or talk about it. Is it fear or what is it?
Yeah, I feel like it's just, we don't know how to understand it. And like, I don't know how to understand it. It's such like a senseless thing. But a lot of times in like films or books, it's painted as this like very poetic thing. It's like, oh, this person was in so much pain and, you know, they killed themselves, and it's almost like it's art, like it's not painted how mental illness can be in the moment. And I think it can be very annoying. You know, we say to people, oh, like pick up the phone and talk to someone, and you can do that once, but what about the day after that and the day after that and the day after that? Like, it's, mental illness can be very relentless and just all the time. And so the solutions we've decided solve it, I don't think do, which is, you know, just like reach out to someone once and then you can fix yourself. But it's like a daily process. And I think then when someone finally does it, it's people like to remove themselves a little bit from it, of being like, I had no idea. I had like, if only there'd been a warning sign. But I said it in the article of like, you know, happy people don't kill themselves. And I also think unhappy people, they don't hide that unhappiness very well. But I think the stuff that we say when it happens, of like, you know, he seemed so happy, or I had no idea. It's because we don't know how to handle it. It's almost like that there's a responsibility on you if you noticed that that person was unwell. But none of us have the tools to know how to help someone through mental illness, because none of us can understand it, if that makes sense.
Mm. And in a sense, I guess a lot of people choose not to see as well. You cut your teeth, I understand, in comedy in LA. So on the LA scene, is it, you know, if you've lived there for a while, is the attitude different? Could you be more open with people in LA about mental health difficulties, or, you know, going through some dark times than you could in Ireland, do you think?
Yeah, I suppose so. Like, you know, Americans are very open. Almost they're like too much, where it's like, I didn't need to know that. Like, they can be too forthcoming. And yeah, but I still, you know, people still, oh no, there's an ambulance going by there. People still kill themselves. Like, I don't think they have the answer either. I think it's like, you know, as human beings, it's almost like we're aliens, but we're trying to figure out like how to connect with each other and how to matter. And I think that's very universal in that we don't know how. So like Americans, their answer is like, let's be open about everything. Let me tell you every single thing I had for breakfast and put it up on Instagram, and as if that's the solution. But then the Irish one is so the opposite of it. And I mean, we're getting a lot better. I think like my generation aren't as bad as my parents' generation, which was like, we don't have feelings. They don't exist. Never heard of that. That's an American thing. You saw that in a TV show. But now my generation are more like, no, they exist. But we don't really know how to deal with it either.
To go back to the ISIS watch list, what's the ISIS watch list about?
Oh my God. Okay. So I know I said it was like all truthful, but that was a bit of a lie. I don't even know what that means. You know, and ISIS, is that like ISIS are looking at people? Like, am I on their watch list?
Yeah.
Then it's just everybody, isn't it? They hate everybody. But I was living in Amsterdam and I was doing a master's there, and my thesis was on ISIS. So I just had to get this government clearance to allow me to do the research. It's a very boring story that I, you know, spiced up and put in as that thing, so hopefully people buy tickets. But it's got nothing to do with the story at
the
all.
The story. And what about Kanye West in the psych ward?
Yeah, so in LA, when I overdosed, the hospital that I went to is like a very famous celebrity hostel. I don't want to say the name because I still haven't paid my bill for that. It's very expensive in America, but like everyone knows it. Same one Britney is at. But so in LA, you have this thing. It's called your 5150, where if you attempt to kill yourself, or if you're considered a harm to other people, you're like legally the state of California puts you under a sort of arrest for 72 hours. And so when it happened to me, I was 5150'd in the same hospital that Kanye was also 5150'd. But obviously I never met him or anything. I just read it on the internet. My friends text me being like, Kanye's in the same hospital.
He was there at the same time, was he?
Yeah, he was. And okay. I tried to be, I was like, so what did he have for breakfast? Because it's a very fancy hospital. You had like, you had three courses for breakfast and options. And I was like, so what did Kanye get? But they're like, oh, we can't say that. It's confidential. So
did they confirm to you that he was there while you were there?
No, but like they, you know, everybody
knew. Yeah. And actually, out of curiosity, with Kanye, you know, talking openly about various mental health problems, I mean, Kanye is a funny one in the sense because obviously he says outrageous stuff, but also he put on the front of his recent album, and he made a point about it on that Jimmy Kimmel interview, you know, his Ye album. It does say, I hate being polar. It's being bipolar. It's awesome. So he does reference this. Yeah, he does talk, and he has started talking out about being bipolar. Does that help someone in his kind of position, do you think? Does that help the conversation?
I don't know with someone like him, because from an outsider's perspective, it seems like he's still very much in it. So he says he's like crazy stuff and we laugh at it because it's funny. But that's like another thing of like, okay, but then like tomorrow, if he does kill himself, then we'll be like, that it was the biggest tragedy. So he's like displaying symptoms of very obvious mental illness that we all laugh at.
Yeah,
which is kind of the problem. So I don't know if it's good for someone like him who's clearly in the throes of the mental illness to then be talking about it. I don't know. I don't know the answer.
Yeah. And for, you know, so your comedy show is coming to the stage for the Dublin Fringe. It's kicking off on the 18th of this month. Have you staged it already? Have you, is this its debut or?
I mean, pretty much, I've done a couple of previews. I did a preview in Belfast last week and two previews in London a couple of weeks ago that were half previews that were like 30 minutes.
Okay.
It's so different to anything I've done, like, compared to like my club set as a comedian. It's nothing like that at all. I'm very nervous about like debuting my first hour. But the feedback I've gotten from like even just the couple previews I've done has been surprisingly very positive. I didn't realize, like, I tried to be very honest about how I felt when I was in that period of my life, but I never knew how much other people have felt that way too. Until I did those previews, and you know, it's not that many people. There was like 50 in Belfast, the other two were I think like 12 or 13. But there was so many people coming up being like, I have felt that way too, like I've never heard someone say all that. Which was quite it felt quite good to know that. I thought writing, I was like, maybe everyone's going to think I'm mental and I'm the only person who's ever thought that. So then hearing people say like, I've felt that too. It's upsetting in a way, because it's like, God, so many people feel this. But it's quite comforting as well to know that you're not the only one.
I was going to ask you, do you know, has this whole experience, I know you're just taking it to the stage more now, but has it helped? But in a sense, I guess that's the answer, because the feedback you've already gotten has let you know that you're certainly not alone in experiencing these emotions.
Yeah.
And for what people can do, you know, we started at the start talking about, you know, maybe in Ireland we don't open up enough about it, we don't talk about it, but talking about it is one thing. Is it constantly reaching out to someone, constantly letting someone know, hey, it's okay to give me a call even when you're feeling not so good?
Yeah, I mean, my view, which like I don't know is the right view, it mightn't be like this is a Martin's approved view, but I think as great as it is to have people around you that can support you, I think you have to find the tools to help yourself, because it is relentless. It is, it's all the time. It's, you can save yourself one day, but you're not fixed. It's not like I've beat this. It always comes back. And I think until you develop the tools yourself to know how to get out of it once you're in it, anything else, it seems a bit superficial to be like, oh, well, you know, I have this friend I can always go to, because if it's something that's for the rest of your life, you can't rely on one. And it's unfair to rely on one a group of people to always get you out of it. You kind of have to do it yourself, as great as it is to have people around you that will support you in getting yourself out of it.
Sure. And by the way, your family, because obviously, you know, while it's your story, it's also in the sense of, because it covers your father's death, it's your family story as well, I guess. Have they seen it? Have they responded to it?
No, and they won't see it. My mum read the article that I wrote, and I was quite nervous about that, because you're right, it's not just my story, it's theirs too, and my family are very private. So I thought they would react quite negatively, but my mum was quite very positive about the article, where she was like, I thought it was great, like it made me cry, and but also. She doesn't even want to see my comedy just in a regular club setting, where she was like, you're not that funny. Why can't you be like Tommy Tiernan? So she's not going to come to my Irish show.
Yeah. So it's not the fact that the story is so close to home. It's the fact that she doesn't think that you're funny enough. That's her problem.
She was like, dear. I just don't get it. You just talk in that bored voice, and it's just not funny.
Fab. I love it. Well, listen, the show is called Drowning. It is opening on the 18th of September as part of the Dublin Fringe Festival at the Comedy Cellar, which is that festival club on Dame Street. And it runs until the 22nd. Is that right, Maurice?
Yeah, that is it. And you can get tickets online. And I urge anybody to do that, because I can check the sales report every minute, and I do it, and it can be very depressing sometimes.
Okay, for the sake of Maurice's mental health, let's make sure we get the ticket. We buy our tickets early. You can check them out on fringefest.com. Maurice, great to talk to you. Good luck with the show.
Thank you for listening to me.
Not at all. It's been a pleasure. And thanks so much, and enjoy the festival.
Thank you.
Cheers. Take care. That's Maurice Gahan there joining us. And as I said, that's part of the Dublin Fringe Festival. It's called Drowning. Kicks off on September the 18th. Check out their website on fringefest.com. This is The Green Room on News Talk.
News Talk 106 to 108.